Hello, hello, my name is Clark Heron, a.k.a. The Hairy Hobo, and welcome to a.k.a. Sports. Oh, Christmas is just mere week away, and obviously we'll be enjoying the Christmas and holiday festivities. Hopefully everyone else is as well. And if you are listening to us, thank you very much. Continue to do so. There's other ways to listen to us. If you go to anchor.fm/a.k.a. Sports, or you can check us out on Facebook, which is facebook.com/a.k.a. Sports FB. Fletch, once again, back with me. Christmas is coming up. Biggest, or let's just do this. Let's do most favorite Christmas meal. What's your favorite Christmas food, shall we say?
That's a good one, man. Favorite Christmas food? Man, I'm going to go with the holiday ham.
Yes, especially like honey baked ham, real nice.
Ooh. Yeah. See, for me, Thanksgiving is more about the sides, but I don't know, man. Christmas is that that ham just hits a little bit different.
Yeah, and ham's pretty close up there. I would typically go with the corn pudding is typically what I like to go with. Very, very delicious. Always a crowd pleaser. But we have some sports to talk about. So we will jump into it. Obviously, we have some news and notes. We have our pick six as well as our NFL top 10. This week, we found a few NFL or a few news and notes, not just NFL. It was another slower week. Again, this time of year, it's pretty slow for now until we start picking up with the bowl games start playing. But until then, first and foremost, there's three topics that I really wanted to start with, and I'm not sure exactly which one to go with first, because really two of them kind of earned their place as number one. Let's just start off with the news that came out just today. Urban Meyer, the former head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, has been relieved of his duties, head coaching duties there in Jacksonville. There was a lot of information that came out, a lot of rumors about telling his coaching staff that they were all losers and that he was just better than everybody else. And then I think the straw that broke the camel's back was the news that came out when former NFL kicker and Jacksonville kicker Josh Lambeau coming out saying that he at one time was kicked by Urban Meyer during warm-ups of a game, telling him that he better not bleep his miss his kicks. So his tenure, 2-11, I believe, what his record was there in Jacksonville, did not create anything near success there in Jacksonville. Fletch, before I give my opinion on the subject, because I've gone through Facebook, I've talked to a few people here and there, what is your opinion about the whole Urban Meyer saga there in Jacksonville?
I just, he clearly wasn't a good fit for professional football. And not only that, I don't think he was ready to coach again at all. This is a completely, I don't know. This is, I wouldn't say we're blindsided by this from Urban, but at the same time, I think a lot of us are a little shocked. We didn't hear about any of this in Utah, Florida, Ohio State. Not to this degree, at least. We know there was a little bit of baggage that he comes with. We know that he doesn't like to stay in one place too long. So personally, I wasn't a fan of it to begin with. But the rest of the things that have gone on since his hire is honestly for not just a head coach, but even for a player, is just completely unacceptable. So I'm totally fine with the move. The timing of it was just right. I think up to this point, he had done things that most believe wouldn't have brought him back next year, at least at this point. He would have been fired during the offseason, probably immediately after the season, if you ask me. And this issue with the kicker Lambeau, I think they did the right thing to get rid of him immediately. But it's just a disgrace. And I think Lewis Reddick from ESPN really said it best, man. Like, it's very embarrassing and probably the worst coaching job in the NFL I've ever seen.
I would agree, and it was interesting because right as he got hired and the news came out that he got hired, there was a lot of analysts basically stating that they were confused by the hire. They weren't sure if it was going to be a good fit, and lo and behold, it really wasn't. No prior NFL experience. He comes in with kind of this ego that he had from college. He did so well at most, just about every single stop he had in college. And it's just a different beast in the NFL. You don't get that entitlement without really doing some really good things. And even Bill Belichick at this point, could be released at any point, but he's earned himself the opportunity. But in the NFL, you've got the owner who has final say, whereas in college, you're aiding, you're president. It's a lot easier for them to put on the blinders and not look at any of the bad stuff when you're winning, when you're bringing money to the university, when you're bringing a lot of prestige, all of that. It's a lot easier to put those blinders on. So, yeah, it didn't work out, obviously. He will move on. I doubt he can find another job in the NFL. I would likely, for him, for his whatever is left of his legacy at this point, I don't think there's much left. It's better for him just to kind of retire and move on and maybe fall into like more of an AD role or a GM role, something along those lines. But at this point, I don't think he's going to survive this, at least in the NFL standings anyway.
Yeah, man, I would even go as far as to say, man, like at this point, when it comes to football, from a leadership standpoint, I personally think he should take a hiatus for a little while, just disappear. Spend a few years with the family, and afterwards, I would honestly come back to college sports, being an analyst. If I was him, I would probably leave coaching alone at this point. There's just a lot of things that he did this season. I'm sure on the NFL level, obviously it's not going to be accepted, but if it's not going to be accepted on the NFL level, how long is of a leash does he have in college? I feel like the leash is even shorter. So I just don't see him coaching honestly anytime soon. Clark, I would even say, man, like with the whole like the GM suggestion, I think that's something good down the line, or AD suggestion. But for now, I really think take a year up to maybe 3 years off, disappear, and come back. And I would go back to, well, he was on Fox, right, as a
Correct.
college football analyst. Yeah, I mean, go back to that, man. Like, let it be Fox, whoever else broadcasts these games. If it's got to start off small, it's got to start off small. But I wouldn't want to see. I just don't think he'll be welcomed in any football circles right now.
Agreed. Yeah, he's got to allow some time to kind of pass, and even then, it may not be enough based on what he did, but only time will tell at this point. But yes, Urban Meyer has been relieved of his head coaching duties in the NFL. What a stick in the NFL. Tom Brady has a new clothing line. He has also then went out and put out some NIL deals, or name, image, and likeness deals, with some college players. So he is trying to build a brand, and he wants to compare it to the Jordan brand in the NBA. I took a look at it on the article on ESPN, and interesting style of clothing choice. The problem is, when Michael Jordan did it, he did it off of his athleticism. He's not really well known, at least maybe I'm speaking wrong, but I don't think he's well known for his looks. He's not, wouldn't be a tremendous model kind of deal.
Yeah.
Brady, however, can be and has been. I mean, he's done a lot of like different commercials, especially like cologne commercials, that sort of thing. Very much more well known for his looks. He just has a different way for his commercials. I don't know how this is gonna work. Obviously, it's gonna work to some extent. It's Tom Brady, but maybe I haven't seen the full clothing line. Maybe I could be wrong, but right now, like I told you off air, gives me that Steve Jobs vibe, is what it really gives me. So we'll see. It's glad that he's doing some NIL deals. It'll help out some of those players, but as for competing, I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. The NIL stuff, I do believe will be a good look, and I think that may have some long-standing power there. But as far as the athletic clothing line, it's just too many. First of all, it's just too many of them out there for you to compete. And if you're going to do so, you got to come out with a big splash. And yeah, I'm just not, like the thing with Jordan is Jordan had a it was different because it was more of a culture thing. It was something that wasn't being done yet. For instance, wearing the red and black Jordan ones when they had to essentially wear, white shoes or whatever the rule was, whatever Jordan shoes was wearing. That's why they called the Jordan ones, those red and black ones, the banned ones. That's the nickname because they were actually banned, and he got fined every game his rookie season for wearing them until they changed the rules. He changed the game. His clothing and his shoes changed the game, more than more than anyone we've ever seen. There's no way that you there's not enough. You can't really change the game at this point, Clark. And you can't make a big enough splash at this point, especially we already wear Under Armour, Tom. I mean, that isn't that who you're signed to? You don't you own a stake in Under Armour? I mean, that's like Steph Curry if he were to come out with a clothing line right now. It's like, nah, you're Under Armour. We can't buy you. That's why when you see the Nike athletes, they may have their own logos. Tom Brady and Steph Curry also, they have their own logos. All these guys do. However, they're still part of Nike, Reebok, Adidas, Under Armour, whoever these names are. Now I know Puma is big into the sporting world as far as apparel and athletics and shoes as well. So yeah, man, I'm with you. NIL, good look. Clothes, nah, hard pass.
Hey, he might get some help if he goes onto Shark Tank, gets one of those sharks to help him out, really push the clothing. Like Daymond John, he's in the big clothing. He's
Yeah.
got his look. I think it's FUBU, I believe,
Yo,
is his.
that's
So
him.
he probably won't help him because it would be a direct competitor. But I mean, yeah. Well, again, we'll see. I doubt it, but we will see at this point. But again, definitely
Yeah.
the NIL deal is definitely a good look for that brand. Speaking of college football, there was some big news that actually rivaled the Urban Meyer firing until just today, which was the Jackson State University led by head coach Deion Sanders. I think some might recognize that name. Goes out there and gets, I believe he was ranked the number one overall recruit heading into this coming draft in the early signing period, which was huge news, something that in a historically black college, I don't remember a time that's ever happened, at least in my life. Could be wrong. I don't think that's ever happened. There has been a lot of phenomenal talent and Hall of Fame talent coming out of the HBCU colleges, so they're definitely nothing to shake a stick at this point. But
Right.
I mean, Deion Sanders, I mean, that's kind of what you needed, was him to go out there, use his NIL, if you want to keep it in that range. I mean, he's got quite the brand just by himself, and people are going to go to him. Players are going to go play for him, even if that means turning down multi-million dollar deals to go to the Alabamas of the world, or Texas A&Ms of the world, that sort of thing. But let me ask you this, Fletch. Do
Yes,
you
sir.
see this being more of a trend where we'll see more of these players go this route? Or does these bigger colleges, the big names, still have a hold on everything?
The former. Absolutely, I think this is a trend. I don't know if it's more of a trend or something. I think we'll just see happen a lot more and more. Reason why I say that is the there's one thing in this that's been apparent to me. Is that there has been a lot of focus from professional players and well-known celebrities as well, really pushing for HBCUs to have a little bit more of a platform on television, just becoming more, allowing those schools to become a little bit more popular. It's no Deion Sanders being, the first high-profile name we've seen at an HBCU in quite some time. And probably the biggest name in out of football that we've seen coach at HBCU. That was a huge thing. But just a few years back, there were a few recruits on the basketball side of things that I know decided to go to an HBCU over going to a big Division One powerhouse. Another reason why I say this was going to work, man, is that's my first reason. Just with the push from that, like. And just to mention that too, I guess I need to backpedal just a little bit. Chris Brown and Michael B. Jordan, for instance, and really pushing this HBCU classic that they have now in college basketball. I think it's four teams that play in this, if I'm not mistaken. That's something to look into. And then also, just if you notice with college football this year, it's obviously just a little bit more of a focus on that as well. Moving forward, the other thing is that the not just the celebrities and like the like I said, former or not so much former players, but professional players, former college players, I should say. There's also the NIL. We know this was going to change the whole landscape of things. Why do I need to go to Alabama and go get paid and go to the league when I go to Jackson State and do the same thing? You could say one because it's Bama, but at the same time, if you want to go to HBCU, the opportunities are still there. I think this kid has a deal with Barstool Sports, and a lot of the controversy came behind him being flipped from Florida State, which is, Prime Time's alma mater, to his now Jackson State where he's coaching. But I think Deion Sanders also has to deal with Barstool Sports. So there's a little bit of, I don't know, maybe collusion with this one is what the old controversy was. That's the second point is going to be is the NIL thing in general. The kid can go get paid no matter what. And the third, man, and this has always rang true, high school, college, and professional. If you are good, Clark, they will find you.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree with you as well with the NIL allowing these players, these athletes to, no matter where they go, there's going to be companies that will go out there, and as long as you fulfill whatever that agreement is in the NIL, you're going to get paid, and you're going to get paid pretty well, especially when you're towards the top, if not at the very top of your class. So hopefully that's the case. We'll see. Again, the college landscape is always evolving, always shifting. I know we had a ton of movement just this year. There's a very good chance that we'll continue to see more movement. I think even today there was news about the new NCAA constitution being unanimously voted on to potentially be the new constitution for the NCAA, which part of it was for not penalizing. So if something happens 2 years ago, the team now won't be penalized for what happened 2 years ago, which is phenomenal. Because again, just like we saw with Louisville and basketball and the Adidas scenario, I mean, Rick Pitino didn't get penalized. I mean, he did, but he just went overseas and started coaching over there. He didn't really truly get penalized, but the players that were left and the coaching staff that was left were. So hopefully that will change there. There's a few other things that I read into as well, but back to the topic at hand, definitely in favor of allowing these students to go out there. And if they're smart about it, they can set themselves up just in case, you know what, the NFL doesn't quite pan out. They're going to be good for quite a while, or potentially generational, depending on how things pan out.
Yeah, definitely generational, man. The notable things I want to mention about the NIL topic while we're on it, Clark, is really two players. One is Bryce Young. It's reported he made shy under $1 million this year. That number will increase. That I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, he has to come back next year. He'll play next year. I'm assuming he's going to make more next year. But the next kid after him, and the next kid after him, that's even more marketable. Imagine how much they can make. I think we may. I don't know if we. I can't remember if we talked about it last week or not. But I know it was a topic in one of the circles that I'm in, as well as it's been a topic recently on TV. Is with these what about these guys in the last 10 to 20 years? What would have they made? What would have the Johnny Footballs and Reggie Bushes in the world and Tim Tebows and Lamar Jacksons of the world made while they were still in school? So it's going to be very interesting once we get a high one of those high profile, undeniably gifted, and one of these star players that just has the it factor. How much can they possibly make? And the second one I'm going to mention, and this is one it's a little shocking to should be shocking the most. It shouldn't be, but it is, because we're not expecting a women's basketball player to get paid the way she is, and that's Paige Bueckers, man. And she has a Gatorade deal now. She essentially Clark, and to be honest with you, and I know Breonna Stewart's still in the league. I know Candace Parker was just on the front of 2K, and she just won the award. I know they just crowned or won the championship. I know they crowned Diana Taurasi as the GOAT recently. But Paige Buchers might be the face of women's basketball in general right now. I don't know if maybe because that's her game and UConn put together. But now look at what she's doing in the NIL landscape. So just something to look out for, man. I'm really excited to see, like, this next poster boy, who this is going to be in either really college football or basketball in the next years to come, that's really going to take advantage of this NIL situation and show us, you know, how much they can really stretch it.
Yeah, and hopefully we won't see a fall from grace via a la, like, O.J. Simpson back in the day or Tiger Woods type scenario. You know it's going to happen, unfortunately. This isn't a perfect world. But, yeah, at this point, sticking with the good, go out there, make your money. In case the next level just doesn't pan out, you are good to go if you know how to handle that money and spend it correctly and have a good group of people around you. You can do a lot of good things. So congratulations to each and every single one of them that's taken advantage and that will take advantage. And like you said, when we get to the next best high-end player that comes out and really takes advantage, I can only imagine what those numbers will be like. As well as I'm a little bit more curious just to see how well they handle that pressure as well. Because there's going to be a little bit of pressure with that. But if they're as good as they are, they will be just fine. Before we jump into back to the NFL and all the wonderful COVID news, Fletch, you got a little bit of news for us today. Just here happened recently in the NBA. A record was set. Tell us about that.
Yes, man. Steph Curry has now, and we knew this was inevitable, but he has now broken the record for most threes in the history of the NBA, surpassing Ray Allen, who was second on that list, breaking that record while he was a Celtic, and then pushed into the end of his career. I think the number was 2,973. New record, obviously, is 2,974 and counting. I don't know exactly where it's at now, but it's safe to say that number's going to be well over 3,000 in the next few weeks. So that's something that it's very exciting, man. I will say, I heard somebody liken it to the home runs in baseball, kind of having the same kind of stigma in a sense. And I do like that. I mean, home runs are a little bit more rare than an NBA three pointer, but it's the long ball of basketball, if you will. And it's interesting to see how the game has evolved. Steph Curry's obviously a big part of that. I mean, guys like Ray Allen, Reggie Miller, Dirk Nowitzki, these are a few guys that I'm just going to mention that really, like, helped transform the league into what it is now. That Steph Curry has essentially broken all the barriers down of the idea of a 3-point shot being a bad shot. So it's actually the preferred shot now, if you can shoot it at a good clip. So, or even at an average clip, I guess you could say. So I think not only is this kind of it's a big deal because of the record that is broken now. It seems to not be broken too often. It was Reggie Miller, then it was Ray Allen, now it's Steph Curry. It's not something that gets broken year in and year out. It takes a decade-ish for this one to break. The question, Clark, is this: do you see this record standing? Whatever he sets this at, do you see this record standing? He's 33, will be 34 sometime this season, I believe. He's under contract for quite a while. I don't know how long he'll play. He's a small guard, slight build, so I don't know if, you know, the wear and tear will end his career early or not. What do you think, Clark? Do you think this record is something that's going to be pushed to the point where it can't be touched? Or is it something that you'll see fall again?
Well, I think you kind of answered it a little bit in your explanation of how the NBA is played right now. And that's simply that the three ball is the preferred shot at this point. Analytics are pushing for NBA players to shoot the three. When you go to a last second shot, I've seen several times where instead of rolling to the basket to get a quick layup to tie the game, all five players are behind the three-point arc looking for the game-winning shot. It's just how the NBA is played right now. So will it hold for a while? Absolutely, because he's going to put it up there really high. And we haven't quite yet seen another player really just dominate from behind the arc like Steph Curry is currently. But the way the NBA is being played, the way basketball is being taught at the younger levels, the way everything is just trending, yeah, it's going to get broken at some point. Now, how long that takes, that's the big question mark. It may take a while, obviously, because Steph Curry is going to put it up there quite a bit. But the way the NBA is played right now, yeah, it's going to get broke just because everyone's shooting threes. I mean, they even have big men shooting threes at this point because they don't want them playing in the inside like they did back in the day. So it's going to get broken. The question is just a matter of when and by who, but it may become a scenario where it will get broken, but then a 4-point shot comes along somewhere down the road to where that's the new record that everybody's chasing. So you just never know. But congratulations to Steph Curry setting that record and doing it in remarkably fast time, comparative to all the other names that are listed on there. Even James Harden listed on that list. I know he's not too, he's pretty far behind numbers wise, but on the list, he's not too far behind. But
Think he's fourth, if I'm not mistaken. And honestly, I think James Harden very well may end his career second overall, unless somebody that's playing right now passes him by the time he gets there. I think James Harden shoots the three ball at a good enough clip, and he shoots enough of them. That's the thing. And you kind of mentioned it, Clark. One thing that I want to mention with this record too, and this is also why I'm going to agree with you that it will fall. I think it will take a little bit of time though, because not only do you have to shoot a lot of them, you got to shoot it at a well over 40%, like Steph Curry does, or yeah, pretty much well over 40%. It's what I mentioned is this: Steph Curry, his first 3 years in the league, shot under five threes a game. Ever since then, the numbers are, and I'll just kind of rattle them off: 3 years straight at about eight a game, and then since 2015-16, which I believe was the year he won MVP the first time. The attempts have been 9.8 or better from then until now. And this season, it is at its all-time high with 13 three-point attempts per game.
Yeah,
He's
it's go ahead.
shooting almost three times the threes he shot when he came into the league at this point.
Yeah, it's just the way that the NBA is being played. He's not even looking for a 2-point shot right now. It is purely threes, and when you're that good and you're making that many of them, there's no coach in the NBA or even college level that will say, "Well, you're shooting too many threes, making too many of them. Sorry, you got to shoot for twos." No, they're going to allow him to do it. Just thinking about the three of them, just imagining some of the much older players that didn't have the 3-point line, what they could have done. But even then, Steph Curry is kind of on his own little island when it comes to just what he did, not only in college at Davidson, but what he's doing in the NBA as well. Fletch, you had asked me off air. Let's just go ahead and bring it back up here.
Sure.
Do you believe Steph Curry has entered the top 10 all-time list, at least for your list?
As for me, no. Do I think he's knocking on the door? Yes. Do I think he could finish top 10 once it's all said and done? All depends on how the rest of his career pans out. I'll be honest, and we'll save the whole top 10 argument for another day, another show, another time frame. But at the same time, I give you the 10 that I have because I'm very confident in my 10. My 10 is pretty solid and has been for a couple years now. And honestly, I do have them in order. And I'll say this: you can flip flop around if you want to, but the point we're going to get to is going to be Steph here once we get to this 10. 10 for me is number one is Jordan. Number two is Kareem. Number three is LeBron. Number four is Kobe. Five is Magic. Six is Bird. Take a breath. Seven is Duncan. Eight is Olajuwon. Nine is Shaq. Durant is 10. I just don't think you can put Steph Curry in front of any one of those players. You can argue me Durant all day. My thing with Durant is this: if Durant never shows up in Golden State and LeBron's second best player in the NBA Finals in 2015 is not Dellavedova, does Steph Curry even have a ring? playing devil's advocate, obviously, but at the same time, that is something that is a good debate to have. It's something that you can question, and no one can really scoff at that. You can essentially look at it and be like, well, you got a point, however, and then you can rebuttal and include him in your top 10 if you like. But because of that being my 10, and that's not even including guys that played back in the day, just because I don't include them on purpose. They're more so a pioneer to me than somebody that I'm going to put in my top 10, because I didn't see him, and there's not a lot of footage. And those go to like Elgin Baylor and Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell and those guys. It just goes, Jerry West is included with that. It just goes so far back for me that it's very hard for me to include them, especially with our ages and everything and what we've actually seen. So nonetheless, that's the reason why Steph Curry is on the outside looking in. But if I had to say, maybe top 5 or 10 most influential players, he's certainly top five in that category. Clark, what do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely when it comes to influential, he's definitely there because, like we mentioned earlier, the way the NBA is played, just shooting threes, he's a big proponent as to why that the analytics are being pushed to people shooting threes. And if you can make them at a healthy clip, yeah, we want you to be the next Steph Curry because he's helping his team win just by shooting the long ball. And at this point, he's being triple covered and quadruple covered, and like it's helping move the game in a much more entertaining direction, we'll put it that way, just because of how much the high scoring is. When it comes to top 10 all time, I would say he's probably, if I had to put a list together, he would probably just be on, I'll be a, be in the same area, just on the outside looking in. I liked how you described your top 10, not choosing guys that you just haven't really seen a whole lot of footage for, or at least flip books of drawings of their play, something along those lines. So I get that, but at the same time, for me, the reason I'm not a big proponent in doing top 10s of all time and doing these lists is because just the Jordan debate versus LeBron, that's the whole reason why you have to put them in groupings of decades. Each decade, when you actually play one another, when you actually play against the same, mostly the same competition with the same rules, that kind of stuff. That's why Magic versus Bird is just like one of the easiest topics when it comes to comparison because they played just about, or basically their entire careers against one another. And they have so many overlying points to where we see them in the finals against one another, and we see them playing in the regular season against one another. It's all there. Whereas if you're trying to compare the Bill Russell versus Michael Jordan, you can't. They didn't play in the same era. They didn't play with the same rules. I mean, imagine, just like I mentioned earlier, imagine some of the better three-point shooters or the long-distance shooters back in the day when there was no three-point line playing in today's game where they can actually shoot a three and score 3 points rather than making their older coaches pull their hair out because they're shooting a quote-unquote bad analytic shot back in the day. That's the only problem for me. I would much rather put together a list of influential when it comes to that, just because you can actually can compare based on, I mean,
Their
how much,
influences.
yeah, their influences on the game as well as like what did the media do? I mean, the only reason I know of the George Mikan is because the media talking about him and actually having a George Mikan drill when I played basketball. That was the first time I heard about him. I was like, what are you talking about? I don't know who this person is.
What is this old guy?
Right. And you do some research and you're like, oh, he's actually pretty good. Like,
It's the first goat.
yeah, he was the first big Lakers center to ever play. But at the same time, most people don't know that. And they just like, oh, it's the Mike and drill. I don't know why they call it the Mike and drill. Some Mike and guy really liked to do layups every other time. I don't know. But yes, for this list, I would prefer to do influential. Be much more easier to do, just because, again, trying to compare players that played in a different era with different roles. I mean, trying to imagine Kevin Durant playing in the era where tackling was essential in the NBA.
Yeah, put Durant in the 80s.
Yeah, it ain't going to work out very well. Whereas, what are some of the biggest, dunkers like Vince Carter trying to play back in the day when dunking was not allowed? Does he actually create a new shot so he can survive in the NBA, or Does he go off and just not play in the NBA because he's not allowed to dunk? I mean, that's the whole reason Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has the sky hook. It's because he wasn't allowed to dunk. So we could go on and on about this, but I like where you have Curry right now. He will continue to play. He will set that mark so far up there that I think just that record alone, along with maybe a couple more rings, wouldn't hurt. Just that record alone might push him into the top 10 over some other players, but we will continue to enjoy his game, and potentially, if he's still playing in the NBA when there's a 4-point or 5-point shot, who knows? He might be the first record holder of that moving forward. But
Oh gosh, I don't need a 4 point or I don't need anything further than a three. It's enough. It's enough.
you say that, but you say
Until they
that,
do it.
it's gonna happen. The NBA is an entertainment sport. They have pushed it to the point where it's kind of like watching an all-star game every single game because very little defense, high scoring. They want people in the seats because they want to see the shots being made. Unfortunately, they have devalued defense for the most part.
I don't know. I don't know. And this might be a good debate for another show as well, Clark, to be honest with you, because I think the new rules that were implemented into this season has really helped the defense out a lot this year. We can get into that with a couple guys and looking at even just the numbers. And I'm glad they did it, Clark, because I think you're right about the direction that it was going, and it was becoming very, very, very offensively oriented. And I still think there's a little bit of offensive bias. But I will say, man, that new rule has done wonders to allow these guys to stop getting these bailout calls that are just inflating their numbers. But nonetheless, that's something we can kind of get into, man. It's a breath of fresh air, to be honest with you. I'm glad it's happening, but it's a good discussion, I will say.
Agreed. And the other rule that they kind of should look into is not allowing a defender to be in the paint. But that's neither here nor there. Again, we've got too much time to actually fill with that kind of conversation. But we will get into that sometime later on. Fletch, let's finish out this news and notes with some fight news.
Yeah, man. We'll do a quick recap over this past weekend, actually. We had UFC 269, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, 269. It was a two title fight card, five fights as usual. Undercards were, pretty entertaining, but the fights we came to see was Amanda Nunes versus Pena. Nunes was on a 12 fight win streak, essentially decimating her competition, putting her on a path to stardom, pound for pound best fighter in UFC. Regardless of gender, she's a complete beast, man. And she was upset. She was upset. She lost. I'm completely shocked. And she lost, actually, I want to say it was second round by submission. Something I did not see coming. The fight started off very good. It was pretty much back and forth, and a couple blows by Peña to Nunez kind of showed us, like, wait a minute, she got a real shot here, and she just kept going and going and going, man, and ended up taking the belt from her. And I'm really happy for her though. That's something that I'm sure no one saw coming. Great fight, very quick, but great fight. I'm excited to see what happens next. In that with these two, actually, I would love to see a rematch. Because I think Nunez is going to come back, and I think she's really going to have something to prove here. And we'll see if Ping is, the top dog or not, or if it was just a one fight thing. So, very interesting to say the least. Second on that, or I shouldn't say second, but that was second to last fight on that card. The main event was the lightweight championship with Oliveira versus Poirier. Poirier notable for beating Conor McGregor in the trilogy. 2-1 as of recently, and becoming the number one contender. Oliveira is kind of a sneaky tie a sneaky champion, to be honest with you. A lot of people didn't see it coming. I believe he was crowned off a vacated belt. His competition that he's fought so far, I think it was Michael Chandler, kind of decimated him pretty quickly. But he still kind of slept on in this fight. Poirier was actually the favorite, and just like the last fight, the underdog won. This time it was a champion being underdog. Rear naked choke submission in the third round, actually. Something that I with Dustin Poirier, he's a tough son of a gun, man. I personally didn't see that happening at all either. So very shocking. UFC 269, one of honestly the most exciting I've seen in a little while with the magnitude of these upsets. Setting, and it's going to set up the fight world, you know, for the next, you know, few years, especially with these names that are included. One thing I want to mention, man, is if you were a betting man that night and you went underdog for the title fights, my friend, let me hold a dollar. Because you just made out. However, man, that was kind of the whole wrap up with the UFC 269. This weekend, I believe it's just on ESPN Plus. Nothing you got to pay for this week, thankfully. Heavyweight main event. Derek Lewis is the big man on this fight. Chris Daukaus. Not too familiar with him. Relatively new with only 15 fights under his belt. However, with the way he's been fighting lately, they do have him as the favorite. Had to check him out myself to kind of educate myself a little bit. But Derek Lewis right now was just main eventing for the heavyweight title not too long ago, I believe just in 2020. So here he is fighting on a non-pay-per-view card. We'll see if this may be, you know, the demise of Derek Lewis, who's been a very pretty decorated fighter in the UFC for those that follow, or if this is something that he helped him get back on the right page. Nonetheless, moving forward to something very interesting happening this weekend, Clark. We talked about this a few weeks ago. A few months ago. First and foremost, we'll mention the headliner here, and that's going to be Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley for the rematch. He got the tattoo. Woodley did after the fight, seeing how he lost. We have the rematch here. We know Woodley, if people watch, for those at home who watched the fight, we know Woodley was in control for most of that fight. Let off the gas. Some people say it was fixed. Some people say it's not. It's the pause. I don't know what the hell you expect. Nonetheless, I do expect a little bit of entertainment. I'm kind of excited for it just because it is a rematch. And the first one was actually worth watching. They actually fought. So I'm curious to see. And they really don't like each other either. So that's always something that's good to see. But Clark, we mentioned this man, like I said, a few months back. Remember we talked about Frank Gore fighting?
Yes, the eternal one.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Frank Gore is fighting on this card. And guess who he's fighting? Deron Williams, former NBA All-Star. Interesting about Deron Williams, and I've actually paid attention to this since he's retired. He was one of my favorite players back in college when he was at Illinois. Really liked what he was able to do in the league, and at one point, people were arguing with him over Chris Paul for the best point guard in the league, if you remember that. However, he kind of got to a point late in his career where he couldn't stay healthy, injured year in and year out from like 2011 on forward. He finally retired just at the age of 32. And towards the end of retirement, I just found out this by reading an article. Articles on the Washington Post, by the way, for those at home. He said he used to hate basketball. His last game was the NBA Finals in 2017 with the Cavs. And people don't even remember this, but he shot 2-for-16. Since then, I don't know, you know, we hear about mental illness with NBA players, and I'm sure, you know, this, you know, was probably, this is something that was, you know, not mentioned, but at the same time, this is something that you can understand just being a former athlete. We both played, not necessarily on the highest level, but me and Clark, you know, I know we both played sports, and you know how it is when you have a string of bad games, or just game, not even bad by everyone else's standards, but by yours. It kind of gets in your head a little bit. Naturally, it does. And this mental toughness is going to help you, you know, power through that. However, for a guy that his body just kept saying no, and that he found love in this other sport, which is actually MMA for him, I'm very happy to see this, man. This I think, is a trend. We saw Chad Ochocinco in the ring earlier this year. We saw Nate Robinson in the ring about a year ago, even though it was a terrible knockout. I mean, the good thing is I really do like the fact that these guys are getting in the ring, though, or the octagon, and showing they can do something else other than basketball. And also for the guys that are hurt, I mean, this is great because it allows them to do a sport that is fun, that is challenging, that can be something that you fall in love with, but you don't have the same wear and tear as you do from running up and down the court or running up and down the field all game. So this is something nice to see, man. I'm happy for these former, you know, professional athletes in other sports trying this out. Clark, one thing I do want to mention, I brought this up to somebody today when I mentioned this fight was happening. There is one man that I am so excited to see retire and get into the MMA. Can you guess who that one might be?
I mean, there's quite a few. Is this from the NBA as well?
He is an NBA player, and he's not a big notable name, but if you keep up with the NBA at all or just the fight scene in general, the name is definitely going to be something you've heard before.
I'm not sure who you would have on there. Let the people know.
Well, let the people know, and I need you to go to YouTube, Google, whatever you need to do. James Johnson. I believe he plays with the Miami Heat,
Okay.
but James Johnson is a tank. He loves, loves, loves fighting. And when he retires, I have no doubt he will do something in that realm. He's 34 years old. I don't care how old he is. If you see this man's tapes, he is an absolute beast. And I'm waiting for this to happen. He's 6'8", by the way. So I would assume he'd be a heavyweight. 6'8", 240 is what he's listed at. So give or take a few pounds. We already know how the NBA does things. However, I can tell you he is at least a full 6'7", and that is a big dude. And that would be a scary man to fight. I believe he's a black belt also, like already. So, he knows what he's doing when it comes to fighting. So that's one guy I'm very excited to see get into the fight world. Obviously, at his age, I don't know how long he'll last. He has been playing for a long time too, by the way. He went to Wake Forest for 2 to 3 years, and then he's been in the league since 09, actually. So just a quick tidbit out there for those at home. We're not talking about a guy that's just like, yeah, he's terrible. Nah, this is a NBA vet role player on every team he's been on. So
Yeah, I do recognize that name, especially from Wake Forest.
okay.
So yeah, it'd be very interesting to see not only him, but maybe some other names that might follow the suit of Deron Williams, depending if he doesn't get ran over by Frank the Tank. But we will keep an eye on that and watch that this weekend. Let's go ahead, and I think that is news and notes for this week. Let's go ahead and jump into our pick six this week, which, of course, the NFL. Sometimes we like to pick some games, and last week, Fletch, congratulations. You got five of the six correct. Did very, very well. I only got two right, so you jumped three on me, so
Out time.
you're only down two heading into week 15, so.
Here we
Oh,
go.
things are getting real interesting now, and I guess, and like I said, my late game picking of the NFL is never a good sign, and this is the beginning of the end. But I will
Wait,
try my.
Clark. Wait, wait. I
Yes.
want to mention this to the people at home.
Do it.
Hey, so we were moping for like the last month about fantasy football. Clark, you want to tell the people at home what we actually accomplished this past week?
To the disbelief of us both. Especially your team, not to be.
No, you're right.
It's a true disbelief just because you were either the least amount points for or the second least, one of those two.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I'm pretty sure it's the least.
You made it into the playoffs. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
You got a game ahead of everybody else that had to fight their way in, and you showed up this week. My goodness, did you show up? You said, "Hey, I'm tired of being the lowest scoring team. I'm going to be the highest scoring team this week and solidify my spot in the playoffs." So, congratulations to you. To not be outdone, though, I won my matchup. I was the second highest scoring team, and I solidified the sixth spot of the playoffs. And we will both have a chance, at least this weekend, to win and get into the final four. Should be very, very interesting. If I win, I'll be facing the number one overall seed. If you win, you'll be facing the number two overall seed. And at this point, I would like to make a little bit of a wager between you and I. I would like for us to be in the championship game, if that sounds adequate to you. I think
Great minds think alike.
we would like to be there. I think that's where it is. But yes, it was a very good week for us both. I think your team scored 161 points. Mine was at 151. Sad face, I could have scored 30 more points if I played James Conner, for example, and a couple other players. But that's neither here nor there. At the end of the day, it's just getting yourself the win. But this week, Fletch, just like it's going to be very difficult in our pick six, it's going to be very difficult in fantasy football because of the
It is.
crazy amount of COVID issues that we have in the NFL. Just here recently, some of the bigger ones was Mr. Baker Mayfield was put on that list. Head coach Kevin Stefanski was put on that list, as well as backup Case Keenum was also put on that list. So, a re-sighting of Nick Mullins, if you remember that name, played in San Francisco. He will likely be the starter on Saturday for the Cleveland Browns in what seems to be might be a weather game, much like they had last year. But yeah, it's going to be very difficult with all this COVID going on. I think you have Tyler Lockett that may or may not play this Sunday. He was recently put on the reserve COVID list. I don't think I have too many names of mine. Mine is just injuries. Mine just has Darren Waller, who's decided a total knee replacement surgery is probably likely. I don't know what's going on with his knee. It's to the point where he's not playing at all. And then I have a couple other questionable injuries of Leonard Fournette's ankle, James Conner's ankle. But that's neither here nor there. Fletch, once again, congratulations to us both. We
Yes,
are
sir.
in the fantasy football finals in our league of record. But much like I said, we got to make some more picks, and you got to do a little bit more catching up, which you made great strides this week. But let's get into our first game of the week. We have the Patriots on the road to face the Indianapolis Colts, this time around in a dome, so we don't have to worry about the weather for the Patriots. They're not just going to run the ball 300 times in the game. They'll be facing off against the Colts, who coming off of a bye. They still have JTT, a healthy JTT at this point. And it's going to be very interesting to see if the Colts can get the run game going against the Patriots, who it's Bill Belichick. What they like to do is they take your best player and say, beat us with somebody else, because it's not going to be JTT this week. So they might make Carson Wentz throw the ball here a little bit. This one's tough because I like both of these teams, but I like where the direction is going for the Patriots. I have the Patriots on the road with the win. Fletch, who do you got?
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, man. This is keep it real with you. It's kind of a tough pick for me. Part of me just doesn't. I believe in the Pats. It's just to win this many games in a row. Do I believe that's going to happen? This will put the winning streak at 8. You're on the road, prime time Saturday night game. I'm gonna just go with my gut on this one. I'm gonna go with the upset. I'm gonna go with the Colts. I don't know if that's really that big of an upset though. The way the Colts have been playing lately, I really like what they've been doing. Carson Wentz is actually having somewhat of a decent season now that things have kind of turned around for him. Jonathan Taylor clearly has been the anchor for that team, and he's been balling out of control this year. I'm expecting a little bit more of that. I think this will be a very highly contested game. I think both teams will come to play. I just feel like to win 8 games in a row in the NFL, one is a tough feat. To win on the road is always somewhat of a tough feat, even though I understand the Patriots are undefeated on the road. Also, another thing that it's just like, are they going to finish the season? What is it, 8-0, 9-0 on the road? I don't know, man. I just when winning streaks get to a point, I'm almost looking for them to be broken. And I feel like this Saturday is going to happen. It's an odd day for them to play. Colts are a really good team, play very good defense, strong running game. Getting good play from Wentz. Pittman has looked like a star this year. I'm gonna roll with the Colts on this one, man.
Hey, whenever you go with JTT, it's always a good option. So we'll see what happens there on Saturday. The other Saturday game, the Raiders going to Cleveland to face the Browns. We'd actually just mentioned it here just not that long ago. Cleveland dealing with a ton of COVID-related issues. The Raiders themselves are just dealing with pretty much a lost season. So the question's going to be, are the Raiders going into Cleveland, a place that nobody really likes to go, especially this late in the season, to play in this nasty weather? Are they going to have the motivation to actually try and win this game? Or are the Browns, the very shorthanded Browns, going to get a very much needed win to stay relevant in the playoff race? Just because of the COVID scenario. Man, this is tough because I really don't think the Raiders are actually going to try anymore. They've really kind of fallen out of it. But I'm gonna go with the Cleveland Browns on this one. I don't feel good about it, but this is the type of weather that if the weather is actually really nasty, and I think it might might trend that way. I don't know if it's going to get fully as bad, but this is just screams of a Nick Chubb type game where they just run, much like we saw with the Patriots against the Bills the other week. So I've got the Browns winning. Fletch, who do you got?
Yeah, it's a tough one for me too, man. I'm going with the Raiders. I just think the Browns are a bit decimated at this point. I think what did we say before getting into this pick six? They're on the what third string quarterback at this point, starting Sunday, Saturday, or starting Saturday. Keep in mind, folks at home, this pick six was originated. I essentially just looked at the schedule. We got a lot of really good playoff matchups this week, and it's not even all six of all of them. It's a very, 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 very important week for the playoffs. All the teams have about four games left. There's no more bye weeks. Actually, they have exactly four games left. There's no more bye weeks, and a lot of these the matchups that we're going to be seeing are going to be divisional matchups and have a lot of weight to the playoffs. This week just so happened to have a lot of these matchups. Nonetheless, I do have the Raiders this week just for the simple fact I'm just not sold on the Browns anyways, but I'm also not sold on them with lack of players. It's just a lot of guys out. I think the Raiders do too, but I think the Raiders at least have, we're talking about their key cogs other than Darren Waller in right now, and they've been without him I think the last couple weeks anyway. So that's what I got this week, man. I'm not confident in the Raiders necessarily. I just feel like this matchup kind of is something to it's something to watch, but it's I don't know. I just don't with them being so decimated in Cleveland and the season not really being as well as they thought it would be. I don't know. I just have a feeling they'll take an L this week. So I'm gonna go with the Raiders on this one.
Nothing wrong with that. Let's move on to game number three. Your Denver Broncos going on the road to Cincinnati, a team that just lost a heartbreaker against the 49ers in overtime. The Broncos continue to just run the football, and they look good doing it. Javonte does have a little bit of a knee thing, but it doesn't sound, at least from what I last heard today, he is expected to play. But again, much like this coaching staff has done all season long, they will split the carries between him and Melvin. As for Cincinnati, coming off that heartbreaker, the offense is still there. They just haven't quite put it all together defensively and really closing out games. This one's tough because I like Denver's run game, and Cincinnati can be susceptible at times. Give me Denver in this one. I'm not 100% sure why I'm picking Denver, but I'm gonna pick him. We're gonna go with Denver. Fletch, who do you
Tell you
got?
why you, I'm gonna tell you why you just picked Denver because Denver has a good defense. Denver has a strong running game, like you mentioned. They have a good coaching staff. They have a quarterback that's not a game. He's a game manager. He's not gonna come out and win the game for you, but he's not gonna turn the ball over. I got the Broncos too. Yes, they are my Broncos. They're playing good football as of late. They won four out of their last six. I like them this Sunday. In a huge matchup, and I just think they have the talent on defense to do enough to slow down the Bengals because I think the Broncos are going to be able to score enough with that run game.
Agreed, and if that run game continues, it will be very, very good for them once again. Next game on the list, we have the Washington football team going to Philadelphia to face the Eagles. There's not much to say about either one of these teams. Both of them dealing with injuries. Both of them dealing with, I think, COVID as well. On
Big
top of
time.
that, both teams not very good either. Heinicke and company has not looked great of late. Antonio Gibson was actually benched for a fumble last week. I guess since they're the home team, I'll pick the Eagles. Not confident with it, but as for right now, they might be the better looking team between the two. So I'll pick the Eagles. Fletch, who do you got?
Actually, man, I'm gonna go. Man, this is tough. Washington's dealing with a lot right now with COVID. I think they have 20 players out. Man, I've thought about this a lot because there's a few things going on with this year. First thing I want to mention, obviously, number one, it's a divisional matchup. So these two opponents know each other. Let me see here. Secondly, the Wash, I don't know that you, I mean, they've struggled a little bit here, but I will say Philly has won four out of their last six, just like Denver, we mentioned. They beat Denver in that time frame, along with the Saints. and the Jets. So I'm not saying they played a lot of good teams, but they did what they were supposed to do with a lot of these teams as well. Washington, similar boat, won four straight, and then you just look bad against the Cowboys. A lot of, the Seahawks and the Raiders win were both 17-15. Nothing to write home about. The Bucks win being the big notable win there, 29-19, about a month ago. With everyone that they have out, I'm going to go with the Eagles. The football team, Washington football team, just has they got too many players out. Part of this win streak too, by the way, was Chase Young was playing. Like you said, Heinke's really up and down. Sometimes he has a good game, sometimes he doesn't. Lately, he just hasn't. And for that reason, I think the Eagles, man, just because I think Jalen Hurts, when the chips are down, he can get loose in that pocket and get out of there when necessary. So for that reason, man, I got the Eagles. He not only leads that team in passing, but he leads that team in rushing as well.
Yeah, he definitely has the wheels. We'll see. I think he's in line to start, but I know Gardner Minshew looked good last week, so he may get the start. We'll see, but like you said, it's a very difficult game just because of the COVID situation, as well as both teams just not being great. But
and it's crazy, they're both potentially, let's just say, and again, we pick these games because they're our potential playoff matchups. Right now, Washington is seventh, which is the last wild card spot, and the Eagles are tied with the same record, and they are 6-7 at ninth technically, but they're 6-7 along with Washington and Minnesota and Atlanta and New Orleans. So this whole race here is a bit crazy, and we know the NFC is a bit top-heavy. With the Niners' win last week, that seventh spot is up for grabs, and it could be a bad team there, to be honest with you. So, just kind of something we have to deal with. But nonetheless, that's why this game is very important. The winner of this game essentially will be your seventh or eighth team. Yeah, regardless, because the Niners play the Falcons, and that's another potential playoff matchup as well. So again, we're at that point in the season, man. It is a logjam, and I love it.
Yeah, there is a ton of teams, especially in the AFC. I believe it's a game between the 6th place team and the 13th place team. So
exactly,
an easy loss could push you well out of it. And speaking of the Falcons versus the Niners, that is our next pick 6 game. Obviously, like I mentioned earlier, the Niners getting a nice win on the road in overtime against the Bengals. The Falcons, I believe, won last week as well. They beat the Carolina Panthers again, both of these teams vying for a playoff spot. And back to my old conundrum here. Whenever I pick the Niners, they lose. Whenever I pick against the Niners, they win. and being that they are my team, obviously I want to see them win, but this might be one of the easier games to pick because it is in San Francisco, a long trip. The Falcons aren't as good as their record shows. I got the Niners winning this one. Fletch, who do you got?
Yes, sir. This is another tough one as well. I do think the Falcons, they've showed spurts throughout the season of playing good football. They've lost some tough games as well, and I think that's something that is a little bit under the radar with that team, just with the way things have panned out with, Calvin Ridley not playing the rest of the season, it seems. Also, too, with, Mike Davis originally supposed to be your starter, and you realize Cordarrelle Patterson actually is. It was a fun fact about them, they haven't won more than 2 games in a row, and they haven't lost more than 2 games in a row. It's just sometimes they look really bad in these losses, and sometimes they look really decent in these wins, and they win some close ones and they lose some close ones. Sometimes they get their ass beat. It's essentially what happens, man. It's very weird. The thing about the Niners, man, they're pretty consistent. They play good football. Sometimes it's just kind of get beat at their own game because I think there's some, lacking a little bit of talent kind of throughout at a couple skill positions. That's something that I think could get better. Quarterback play is a little shaky right now, but, at least they got somebody decent back there again. It's not just going to go out here and lose you games either. That's for that reason, man, I do have the Niners winning this one over the Falcons. I think the Falcons are a bit inconsistent. One fun fact I saw about the Falcons earlier today when I was just looking at schedules and everything, there's a an article on the Falcons ESPN page. Are the Falcons the best bad team ever? I think that sums it up perfectly.
Yeah, when you have articles being written about that, that Yeah, it's just not your year. But again, there's some several games that Cordero Patterson has looked really, really good. But for fantasy purposes wise, Matt Ryan has just been unusable. I mean, he's not even in the realm of usable anymore. And maybe that's partly because Calvin Ridley is out. We don't know if he's going to come back this year for these final four games. Definitely not this week. But I like your pick with the Niners as well. Our final game of our pick six, we have the Titans on the road facing the Steelers. Both of these teams kind of trending in the same direction where you're dealing with a lot of injuries and you're dealing with some COVID things, and the Steelers coming off of a game that they should have won, should have had at least another chance at, but Claypool doing his thing kind of ruined that. As for the Titans, the loss of King Henry is felt. Hilliard is doing his best, but it seems like King Henry may not be back as he might be as early as week 18. I don't know if they're really going to push him depending on where they are. And again, they're in that one of those spots to where one loss could easily push you well outside of the playoffs, and I don't know if they have the firepower to get back in. That being said, this one's a tough one because I can kind of see this going either way. I've got Pittsburgh winning at home. I don't know what they need to do. Maybe they finally got Claypool to figure out what the clock management is. But for right now, I've got the Steelers winning. Fletch, who do you got?
Yeah, man. This is a must-win game for Pittsburgh, in my opinion. I don't like to use that term too early in any season or series. However, at 6-6-1, currently last in the division, but still with, pretty big playoff hopes. Again, they're a half game out of the playoffs at 11th in the AFC and last in their division. So there's still a lot of hope here. The reason why I say this is a must-win game is this, Clark. After this weekend, where they play the Titans, they play the Chiefs, the Browns, and the Ravens. Yeah, man. Good luck to you. Two of those games on the road, Kansas City and Baltimore. So, I do have the Steelers winning this game as well. I think they understand the magnitude of this game. I actually think the Steelers, with a little bit of luck, would have a much better record than they do now. Just looking at their schedule, they were on a four-game winning streak until they tied with the Lions. Should have never happened. You only lost by four to the Chargers. We're going to just throw out that Bengals game. You got a gift, honestly, with the Ravens and them going for two when they could have tied it up and went in overtime. But then you lose a nail biter. Like you said, if you had some time left, you could have passed Minnesota. You could have beaten Minnesota, or at least tied Minnesota there and had a chance in OT. So here we are at 6-6-1 with a chance to make the playoffs in Big Ben's last season, is what we believe. I just have a feeling, man, with the Titans' injuries, not just to Derrick Henry, but the receivers as well. I think Julio is back, but I don't know about AJ Brown. I think the Steelers have enough to get it done. Titans, were 20, was it 20-0 last week against Jacksonville? I mean, that's not really anything to write home about. That's what you should do. Probably should have put more on them, to be honest with you. But nonetheless, I just got a feeling with the injuries and the same feeling you have with the Steelers, man. This is a must. I feel like this is a must-win game for them, and I feel like they know that, and I think they'll take care of business.
And that is our pick six for this week. Again, if you want to join in, simply go to facebook.com/akasportsfb and put your picks in as well. We will add them to the list. And if you haven't played along, it's going to be hard to catch up at this point. But at least from this point forward, you can see how well you're going to do against both Fletch and myself. Moving on, last but not least, our NFL top 10 for this week. Going through my top 10, I had quite a bit of change this past week. I really reevaluated all of these teams because I know there was a few teams that were hanging on for dear life that with this extra week just further convinced me that they really should be there or shouldn't be there. But let me go ahead and get things started off. I'll get my list started off with 8, 9, and 10 because the reason I'm grouping these three teams together is because honestly, you could probably rank them just about wherever you want between the 8, 9, and 10. At number 10, I still have the Bengals sitting there. I know they lost last week. You could arguably put the 49ers there. I don't think the Niners are quite ready yet to get there. I like the Bengals and their offense. I'll keep them at number 10. At number nine, I have the Ravens. They dropped back one spot for me this week. It's the problem with the run game and the non-existent passing game. Actually, it was actually better for them. I hate to say it. It was kind of better for them for Lamar Jackson not to be in there because Tyler Huntley came in and just allowed Mark Andrews to have himself a game last week. So I like the Ravens, though they'll hold on to the number nine spot right now. And then at number eight is the Chargers, a team jumping back into the top 10, first time in a while for me. Herbert's playing great football, and as long as they can stay healthy and COVID-free, they play tonight, they should be able to get another win. I like their group, especially getting Keenan Allen back doesn't hurt things at all. Fletch, who is your 8, 9, and 10?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My 8, 9, and 10. Man, this took a lot of thought for me as well, bro. I normally what I like to do week to week is kind of base it off what I did last week, slide teams up or down depending on their wins or losses or performance. I kind of did a little bit of that this week, but nonetheless, here we go. We got number 10 here as I have the Los Angeles Chargers. They look like a pretty good football team right now. Got some pretty, key wins under their belt at this point. And just continue to look pretty good here as well. So, I can't really move them up much higher here just because I think there is kind of a ceiling right here where they are. I don't know how much, better they can, perform or play. They got a huge game coming up here Thursday against the Chiefs, and it's kind of a measuring stick to see where they are right now. The one thing about them is they have been surging in the right direction here at 8-5, solidifying themselves as the top wild card team in the AFC. So I think there's a spot for the playoffs for them, and I think they're a damn good team. But I have them here at 10. At number 9, I have the Dallas Cowboys. I believe I slid them back just a little bit. I wasn't too thrilled with their performance overall. Haven't been as of late. Don't know what it is exactly. A few things that I do want to, at least mention is that it looks like Ezekiel Elliott, at least for right now, that injury seems to be hampering him. We don't know if this is something that's going to continue to be the case where Tony Pollard is kind of, getting into Zeke's touches. And I think you might see that more and more from years to come. And I think, honestly, it may benefit the Cowboys quite a bit, to be honest with you, keep the run game fresh. But I think that's something to really monitor, moving forward this season at least. But right now, just with the little bit of the injuries that they've had, somewhat subpar performance to a degree, I do have them here at 9. I think they could be a little bit better. Here at 8, I have the Buffalo Bills. I believe I had them 8 last week. I kind of been a little hard on them. And I thought about sliding them back, man. But I mean, you lost against a better team, and you took them to the edge, man. It started off pretty ugly early, and they just kept chipping at it, stayed poised. Josh Allen is something to watch, man. Like he carried that team there in the second half and really helped bring them back. They need to get that man a running back that can do something because if he plays the way he plays, it's just. It reminds me of Cam Newton almost to a degree. I don't want to see the kid get beat up any more than what he has been so far. But the Bills, man, I can't say enough about how they performed last week. I really think they had a big shot at winning the whole game. Brady did his thing in overtime and got the benefit of a long pass there as well, or long yak yards after the catch there. But nonetheless, that doesn't happen unless you make the pass. So I got the Bills here at 8. That's kind of rounds out my bottom three here. Clark, what do you got for us, man?
So moving on to the 7, 6, and 5. At 7, I have the Cowboys, kind of climbing back up there. I know they've been struggling health-wise. Dak hasn't really been playing great. He was just mentioned that he doesn't feel like he's in a little bit of a slump. He just knows that he's not playing up to the standards, which I think by definition is a slump. But neither here nor there. I still like the offensive weapons that they have in that defense. When they were healthy this week, my goodness, Micah Parsons is going to be Defensive Rookie of the Year, and there's a really good chance that he probably will be Defensive Player of the Year. And Fletch, there's only been one player that's ever done both in the same year. Do you know who that is?
I'm trying to think. I
Well,
don't.
you should be thinking of the best defensive player of all time, and that should give you the answer.
Oh, it depends on who you say that is. Lawrence Taylor?
It is correct. It is
All
Lawrence Taylor.
right.
He is the only player to get Defensive Rookie and Defensive Player of the Year in that same year of his rookie season. But Micah Parsons, man, they looked healthy. They looked good. Trevion Diggs, I think, still leads the league in interceptions. So I like the Cowboys there, but they're one of those teams that can easily fall out of it as well as climb back into it. Much like I have the Bills probably sitting at number 11 or 12 in my current thought process. Again, one of those teams that the talent's there. We know it's there. We saw it last year. We saw glimpses of it this season. Just hasn't quite put it all together yet. And speaking of one such of those teams, the Kansas City Chiefs comes in at number 6 for me. They move up one spot from last week. This is one of those teams that is just going in the correct direction. They are mojoing their way through teams right now. And defensively speaking, the last 6 games have looked really, really good. Offensively, I still think there's room to be had, especially when Travis Kelce only gets you about like 3 or 5 catches last week. I think it was about 3 for 20 yards, something along those lines. So there's room for improvement, which is scary for a team that we know that their offense can score on anyone. So I like the Chiefs at number 6. And then at number 5, I've got the Rams sitting there again. I know they got a great win against the Cardinals this past week. I still like them sitting at number 5. But again, once we get closer to this top 5, at least for me, this is the opposite. Now we're starting to look at teams that, even in a loss or even in a good win scenario, may not move up just because of what the teams ahead of them have done. But that is my 7, 6, and 5. Fletch, what is your teams in those spots?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So here at 7, I have the Tennessee Titans. I've been a little bit hard on them as well as of late, and they did play well this past Sunday. I mean, they kind of did what they were supposed to do. Like I said, you could even say they should have put up more points. Nonetheless, I'm just curious to see, and it's very hard for me to move this team up or down, in or out, whatever you want to say. It's just with the amount of injuries that they have, they really haven't. I don't know the level of competition lately that they've played. I don't think it's been, been able to expose that yet. And I don't know if the rest of the season if they, will face that again. Because I mean, outside of the Pats just recently, I mean, they had a bad loss to the Texans, but they were on a hell of a winning streak. And then coming up, I mean, you kind of benefiting from the schedule. All the teams that they play are 7-6 or worse. Steelers, Niners, Dolphins, Texans. I picked this team last week to kind of slide out of my top, out of the playoff, possibly as one of them. I think I was wrong. I think I think you were more so correct with the Ravens pick that you selected. Just because one is schedule and two is that somehow, man, they still get it done. And I think the defense has really come to play as of late as well. So I got them here at my number 17. I mean, when healthy, they're a top five football team. I truly believe that, or at least one that you can group in with them with no issue. Without their key cogs, though, it's hard for me to keep them in my top 10. But the fact that they're still winning enough games and they're 9-4. They have a really strong chance of winning 12 games this year. So I gotta take that in consideration. They are a good football team. Winning is part of the game, and they are winning games. Here at number 6, I got the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that's your number 6 as well. Kind of same reasons you mentioned. I had them, I believe, number 5 last week. A little bit of shuffle at the top, and one of the teams that were not performing well kind of showed their true colors, I thought, this past weekend. We'll get to that later. Jumped in front of them, but the Chiefs did nothing to slide back. It's just who's in front of them at this point. That's something that I know you just mentioned as well. It's kind of where we're at in the season is we know these teams, we know who they are, we know their struggles, and we know who they are at their best and also at their worst. And obviously, we'll see how much better or worse they can get over the last, quarter of the season. So, I do have the Chiefs here at 5, at 6, and then I have the Patriots at 5, being idle last week and coming off a big win. I think I had them 4th. One of the teams again just slid back due to, another team performing very well. Nonetheless, they are a really good football team, and I'm excited to see how they finish the season.
Yeah, and like I said, it's one of those teams that just, man, they've got the talent there, much like the Cowboys. You know the talent's there. They just have to really put it together, and this is where now we start getting into our top four, and I honestly believe our top four is the exact same teams, just like slightly different order, but these are
Maybe
the
not.
maybe not. Who knows? But I will do my top four here. At number four, still the Patriots sitting there. They got a great win against. Was it Buffalo this past week? No, it was.
We're
Who did they?
idle.
They were idle. Okay, so that's.
But they, still came off a big win, still on a big winning streak. Like we mentioned earlier, they'll be on an 8-game winning streak if they win this Sunday, Saturday.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you very much for that. So I like them sitting at four. Again, a big game at the Colts this weekend. So we will see if they potentially could move up. At number three, I have the Cardinals moving from one down to three. Again, Kyler Murray at times, even in this past game, did not look good. Threw some really bad passes, some bad interceptions. But you know the talent's still there, even though, except for DeAndre Hopkins, he is done for the rest of the season. So they're missing that point. But overall, I like the Cardinals sitting at three. I have the Buccaneers moving up to number two. And then the Green Bay Packers still sitting at, or now my new number one this week. Again, both of these teams, there's a legitimate argument to have either the Buccaneers number one or the Packers number one. I like them sitting now, but again, could easily swap out depending on what happens over the next, 4 weeks time frame. Fletch, read us off the rest of your top 10.
Yes, sir. So I guess we do vary, and I forgot there was a difference already in our 5 through 10. That was the Rams. I'll get to the Rams here shortly, but we're gonna go. Actually, we'll get to them now. We're gonna get the Cardinals as well. That game there essentially decided my three and my four. The Rams are three, and the Cardinals are four. I love both of these teams, and I still think the Cardinals. I have a feeling they'll still win the division. I know they just have a game right now on the Rams, but I just think, that game is going to be enough to hold them over. They don't play again, and I believe that they beat each other. They beat each other. So this is I just like the reason why I have the Rams here now is that the power rankings that we have right now are as of today. As if they were as of the day the Cardinals beat the Rams, then obviously that would be different for me. Just based on how I've been ranking these guys this season. I do think that they are somewhat an equal team, so it's very hard for me to pick one over another. So that's why I'm going off current data, current teams as currently constructed. And unfortunately, like you mentioned, Arizona is not going to have my favorite player in the league right now, DeAndre Hopkins, at their disposal. And they're also not, and then also on the flip side, we now see, at least a snippet of what OBJ can bring to this team with the absence of Robert Woods and also Van Jefferson being somebody that Matt Stafford can now rely on. I this is part this is going to be something that's going to be very interesting when we get to the playoffs. And this is why we've been talking about the NFC so long, is these teams are very good. I know you have the Pats here in your top four. I have them fifth, and I have a lot of AFC teams here, 4 through 8. But the top four here for me, I'm going to finish out here. I got two is the Bucks, one the Packers. Same as your top one and two. These four teams have kind of, had a little ups and downs throughout the season, but have consistently kind of been the best teams in the league. The Pats started off 2-4. The Titans have had their issues. The Chiefs' issues are well known. The Bills' issues are well known. The Ravens' issues, they're not even in my top 10 this week. And I think what were they for you this week, Clark? 10th?
For which team?
The Ravens?
Ravens were number 9.
Number 9. Again, on the outside, on the inside, halfway in, halfway out here. You mentioned a couple teams that could possibly jump in front of them already. So these four teams, and it's crazy if they're all in the NFC, could possibly really be the best four teams in football. I'd be surprised to see an AFC champion this year, to be completely honest with you, unless the Chiefs catch that fire that they catch. I just don't see any AFC team beating these four teams when healthy, with the exception of the Cardinals, if Hopkins can't even come back for the playoffs or a possible Super Bowl appearance.
Yeah, and we've kind of been touching on it throughout. It's just these teams, even though they haven't truly separated themselves record-wise, and in some realm they kind of have, but That's why it's so close in these playoff races. Again, having one game between the 6th seed and the 13th seed in the AFC, and having another team potentially just one loss could push you well outside. But much like you said, those four teams, five teams, random or within that range, yeah, they're going to be some of the better teams, and it's going to be tough to take care of a Buccaneers team if they're playing really, really good football, especially when they're stopping the run. Whereas, maybe the Packers, who have a high-flying offense but need the run game to get going, with either Aaron Jones, who's a little bit beat up, or even AJ Dillon at this point. So it's going to be very interesting next 4 weeks. We'll have to keep an eye on a few players here and there. I did see just one little quick update on the COVID situation in the NFL. Currently, the Rams have the most currently on the COVID reserve list of 25. Washington football team has 21. The Browns have 20. The Bears have 12. Texans have 8. And then the Dolphins and Vikings both have 6 apiece. So
It's getting pretty intense. A lot of places. I want to mention that the Bulls had to postpone 2 games. There was a hockey game in Canada. I cannot remember, but they are playing with no fans. So I just wanted the reason. I just wanted to bring that up real quick too, man. I hope this doesn't postpone anything, but this is something I think we have to start looking at and hoping that we can stay safe to a certain degree, and not so much just stay safe, but like make sure these teams have enough guys to play, man. That's another issue with this is that not wanting to make one bigger than the other. That's a problem. I mean, that's also health as well. Like if you got guys in football going both ways, that's not you don't want that. That's the high risk for injury, I feel like. So not only are we dealing with COVID, with illness, with outbreak, with possible spread, with possible just contact and traces, and then put on the fact that teams are having to go deeper into their benches, and some teams playing without benches, with shorter rotations, guys playing much more minutes, much more snaps. It's not a good look, man. So I just hope that this situation doesn't last long term. That's all.
Agreed, and we'll have to keep an eye on it moving forward for the many other sports as well. Obviously, March Madness was postponed or canceled back just a year ago, so hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully we have better protocols in place moving forward. But yes, it doesn't seem like the NFL is going to do anything. The only thing they would do at this point is force a forfeit if a team doesn't have enough players to go. They don't.
Tough.
It is tough, very tough. But unfortunately, these protocols are in place for every single team. We'll just have to keep an eye on it moving forward. Fletch, I think we got another one in the bag this week.
Think so, buddy.
I think we finally finished it out. Now, next week we will actually be off because I will be traveling for the holiday week. So we will be taking a week off, and then I believe we've got season 2 coming after the new year. So hopefully everyone that has watched, will watch, will continue to do so. We thank you very much for your support. Hopefully your holiday week and a couple weeks are going to be some good ones. And hopefully as the sporting events will be just as good, especially with college football coming up. Fletch, anything else before we sign off?
No, man, just again, thanks for the support. Thanks for those at home that watch. We always appreciate your views, comments, likes, tweets, feedback, anything that you want to say, shoot at us, let us know. Remember you can hit us up on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, we're on every streaming site. Like, subscribe, share, over the holidays, catch up on some episodes. Not, we talk about current things, but sometimes we talk about some pretty good topics as well. Topics that are still could be, relevant to this time frame and maybe give you something for you and your family to argue about as well. So tune in to us, check us out. I'm excited for season 2. If we don't see you guys until the New Year's, not only Merry Christmas, but Happy New Year's to you. And that's all I got, Clark.
Absolutely. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's to you too, Fletch, and all of us that have continuing to watch and support AKA Sports. As for now, my name is Clark Herron, AKA the Hairy Hobo, and we're out of here.
Peace.